It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
Welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner. Brittany Hughes is still off on maternity leave, enjoying some one-on-one time with the newest addition to her family. But joining me today from Newsbusters and MRC Tech Watch is Alex Hall, the man whose voice actually introduced the podcast from day one.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here for the first time. I'm absolutely stoked.
Is it weird introducing yourself now? Like, you're the voice introducing the podcast, and now you're actually in the studio as well.
You know, I know that my parents get quite a kick out of it. They listen to the first 30 seconds of quite a bunch of episodes just to hear my voice from across the country.
Mom and Dad are so proud. But they'll listen to the complete one today because you're with us, and we're talking about some of the stuff that's going on with TechWatch, a lot of censorship, a lot of stuff going on in social media. And that's something that you've been following and working on for some time now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a very kind of like sci-fi type job because we really are seeing a dystopian level of censorship that is just ramping up day by day. I feel like every other day, it goes far beyond what my expectations could have been as far as how crazy things are getting.
We talk about the free speech being limited on these social media platforms. And the RNC's Dylan, it's Harmeet Dylan, she announced a nonprofit free speech legal defense group. Tell us what's going on in that realm right now.
Well, this is great. And Harmeet Dylan is really on the money with this. And what I actually gave a speech about this at when I was in the California College Republicans about how people, especially free speech advocates, need to start rallying together. They need to start understanding the virtue of teamwork. And Harmeet Dylan understands this better than anybody else. So she's launching this platform so that anybody who feels that their free speech rights are being threatened or being destroyed or being limited, they can go to this platform and they could sort of rally together money for their cause, for their legal defenses. This specifically came, she had this in the works for quite a while, according to what she says. But most recently, she says that the incident that really was the catalyst to launch this was when Mr. Andy Ngo was attacked by far left.
Right. A lot of people have seen that video online. He was attacked by Antifa.
Right.
Really, just the previous weekend, over a week ago in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely insane. And one thing she also, I remember she addressed at the convention a few months ago, she said that one of the dangerous things right now is that many of the think tanks who are saying, no, don't mess with the tech companies that are censoring people, they're not actually censoring, or there's no problem there, don't regulate them. Many of those think tanks, she said, are directly being funded by those tech companies. But with this whole legal defense, I think it's so important because I think for a lot of, especially conservatives and free speech advocates, many of them really, their gospel is the right to be left alone. But the problem with that particular gospel is that if all you want to do is just be left alone, let things go easy, just worry about how high taxes are, then a lot of your civilization, you're pretty much ceding your ability to influence things. And that's really, you're sort of like, I think it's very important that you try to maintain things. You try to make sure that things are going to be better for the future. And I think free speech is one of those values that you really have to be very vigilant about. Because many people, especially with this big tech censorship that's going on, they say, well, you know, the First Amendment says that's only about government censorship. The problem is they're not understanding the underlying spirit of the law, which is about actually protecting the ability for people to engage in the public square. That's what's critical. And I think for a lot of people, their idea of being a moderate Republican is just kind of letting things happen, just being calm, not making any waves. But the thing is, defending liberty, that's a full-time job. That's something you have to be vigilant about. I remember seeing some quote that it's just like, being a true conservative means you're trying to maintain civilization both with the thought of what your ancestors would have wanted as well as what will be the best for your descendants. And I think that's very true. That's something which you have to really sort of stay focused on. That has to be the North Star.
Well, there's been three takes on the social media thing. One is, they shouldn't regulate it at all. It should just be free speech and anyone can say anything they want. And of course, there's always been some regulation on free speech.
Right.
The whole you can't yell fire in a theater. And I think most people would agree with the thought that you shouldn't be making threats to kill somebody or rape somebody or do harm to somebody on the internet, that should be criminal. The other thing is, well, you know, they're a private company and they're able to do whatever they want. So if they want to censor conservatives or opinions that they don't like, they should be allowed to do so. And then you have folks like Senator Ted Cruz who say, well, if that's the take that they're taking, then they're taking an editorial stance, and then they should be held responsible for anything that's published.
Oh, yeah.
On their forum. Where do you see this going? I mean, one of the great things about TechWatch is, you know, a lot of people have stories about their conservative viewpoint being censored, mm-hmm. being limited, being deplatformed, being defunded on these various social media platforms. TechWatch usually investigates these types of reports, finds out if they're true or not, and documents them, which is a great aspect of what your division does.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that just actually came out yesterday, Facebook updated their terms of service so that you actually are allowed to make threats in a certain capacity to people that are considered to be dangerous. And so some of these people that are considered dangerous by Facebook standards are activists like Laura Loomer. And it's like, you know, she's done some crazy things, but it's like she's not dangerous. She's a goofball, if anything. She's an activist and something of a performance artist, but she's not somebody who I think anybody should be allowed to make death threats against. But that's what so much of this sort of left culture is establishing.
So that's it. They're allowing death threats against certain people that they deem are worthy.
Yeah.
How do you get put on the list to be worthy of death threats?
Right. Breitbart just
reported on that. Is that just by being a conservative?
Yeah. I mean, it was her, it was Paul Joseph Watson, and it's other people. I mean, my whole thing, the only limit that there should be to free speech is when you are genuinely calling for violence. That's the only thing. Because it's like, you know, yeah, you know, words can be hurtful, but ultimately you need to get over it. Because one of the things is that, and they really got into this in the, I believe it was the Homeland Security hearing, where a former ACLU representative, she said, one person's hate speech is another person's genuinely, sincerely held belief. And that's the thing, is like, what's the point when facts become hate speech, when statistics become hate speech? That's the whole dangerous thing, is that people are now moving towards this increasingly bizarre line where what is hate speech? Nobody knows. But it gets to be very nebulous about who you get to allow to ban, who you can absolutely have deplatformed. And so it's very dangerous and dystopian, the direction that everything is heading towards.
Okay, so it really depends a lot on how these social media platforms define what hate speech is.
Right.
Let's get to something a whole country defined it in a way on social media recently, France.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, France.
And they did it on July 4th.
On July 4th.
There's some irony there.
It's absolutely crazy what's going on with France and the rules that they're putting on French hate speech.
Yeah, they have a hate speech ban.
Right, they have a hate speech ban. And of all things, it was actually pretty funny. The New York Times cited a French lawyer named Christophe, I assume his last name is pronounced Bigot, but it's spelled like bigot, which is really funny. He actually condemned the recent legislation and its potential for censorship. And he absolutely condemned the fact that this will be overseen by tech companies without the involvement of judges. And judges are supposed to be, ideally, the constitutional guarantors of fundamental freedoms. And, you know, it's really tough seeing a lot of this, because when I think about, you know, France historically, that was one of the places that was liberty, egality, equality, fraternity.
Now, they also have a history of surrendering.
This is true. This is true.
And it looks like they may have surrendered to hate speech. And of course, again, you know, how are they going to define hate speech if they move forward on this law? This is just passed in a lower French house.
Right. It passed in the lower French house. And so there's a chance it may become established law. There's a chance it may not. But yeah, we're seeing a lot of Western Europe get these. It's sort of funny how that's sort of the new Iron Curtain in a weird way is we used to think of Western Europe as being far more free, but it's dystopian in an entirely different sense, in that now it's an enforced politeness that now dominates everything increasingly, to where you're no longer allowed to just say plainly obvious things.
Well, that's the problem with enforcing politeness. I mean, Jordan Peterson's rise to fame was fighting the Canadian law, which said you must call somebody by what they perceive their sexuality to be. And if you offend them, then the government was going to take a role.
What's interesting about Jordan Peterson is that the foundation of so much of what he talks about is evolutionary psychology, natural law. And that in my lifetime, I've seen so much of the liberal left go from people who were all talking about science and objective truth to now, in the current day, so much of what they believe requires a quasi-religious sense of dogmatism. And that's one thing that I've realized. Actually, Jordan Peterson gets into this. He said that the psychologist, philosopher, whatever, Carl Jung, he said, whatever your highest ideal is, that's your God. And so I've begun to understand so many more people by understanding, okay, I'm not dealing with a person who just cares about specific objective facts. I'm dealing with a person who essentially worships a different God, whether it be, you know, political correctness or whatever.
The state.
Exactly. So everybody worships something different, whether they consider themselves religious or not. And so you'll see some of that exact same overzealous kind of dogmatic fervor from these people who consider themselves way, way above all that. And it's pretty ironic. And so that's one thing that I've realized with that. Yeah, some of these people, they will consider objective facts about evolutionary psychology, about sex and gender, about any statistics, and they'll consider that to be absolute hate speech when that's just what the science dictates.
Let's talk a little bit about hate speech, especially as it's been being defined recently by social media platforms in the U.S. I'm going to talk about Twitter first. A slightly humorous story, and it was actually a writer for a liberal organization that got banned from Twitter because he threatened a cartoon character, Mr. Peanut.
Mr. Peanut. Yeah, that's right.
I guess he's not on the list of people that should legitimately receive death threats.
Yes, I guess so, yeah. Yeah, it's a cartoon logo, and the reasoning of this writer, Vice, and Vice has an interesting history in that it was founded by some conservative guy way back then as this sort of, like, edgy, let's make fun of everybody type organization.
Yeah, it's become pretty liberal, though.
Right, and then in his absence, it's become this extreme liberal organization. And it is quite strange because the Vice writer, Taylor, his whole reasoning was that I have to find exactly what his
Luke
words
Taylor's
were.
Luke Taylor's his name, right?
Luke Taylor. He said that brands already act like people on Twitter, so I decided to give a brand the same treatment almost everyone else receives on the platform. Strangers sending them death threats. And it's very
Which
funny.
Is sadly true.
Right. Oh, it's sadly true. But he's very kind of forthcoming, sort of in a tongue-in-cheek way. He said, I was banned from Twitter for threatening to kill Mr. Peanut. And he said, admits, of course, this was not the first, second, or even third time. In fact, he had been, systematically harassing the Peanut Man for about 4 months. And, so it's very interesting because...
What did he say that got himself... banned.
What was the reaction here? So it's very interesting how some people are catching on to there's this kind of like weird corporate pandering, which is sort of increasing to where corporations are no longer these sort of monoliths that are purely transactional, but they're instead trying to be progressive leaders, or they're trying to be your buddy, or they're trying to be these lovable people when they truly are not. It's like you don't consider somebody a friend if your relationship is truly transactional. So where it began was when the account tweeted an actually fairly dated meme. So they tweeted, cashew in the snack aisle, how about that? And they were paraphrasing a reference from a 2016 incident. This girl was on Dr. Phil, and the audience was laughing at her or something, and she said, cash me outside, how about that? And when she was essentially challenging them to a brawl outside the building.
I admit I don't watch enough Dr. Phil. I would not have gotten this reference.
Right. So this is a major meme in 2016. And so this is a fairly dated reference by now because the internet, things become very quickly stale. And that's an increasing thing I've noticed. And so Mr. Peanut tweeted, you know, cashew in the snack aisle. How about that? To which Mr. Taylor responded, he said, what was it? I will fly anywhere in the world to kill you. Just name the place. And then, of course, what made this tweet go viral was then the girl, Danielle Bregoli, now known as rapper Bad Baby, she replied to the tweet with a quick, just thank you, which, of course, made the tweet become much more popular. And then he was straight up banned. He was straight up banned, or rather indefinitely suspended. And the rationale that they gave was that you may not make specific threats of violence or wish for physical harm of an individual or a group of people. But then, of course, Mr. Taylor observes that Mr. Peanut is neither an individual nor a group. He's not an actual person. He's a mascot. He is literally a cartoon peanut. And he was very careful about not threatening the person behind the account or staff who work for that company. He was purely threatening the platonic ideal of Mr. Peanut.
So basically, he threatened a cartoon character.
He threatened a cartoon character and was indefinitely suspended for it. And it's very funny because Twitter is extremely slow to take down threats against real people. I mean,
yeah, they are, but they're fast to, you know, if you tweet learn to code.
Yeah, if you tweet learn to code, you're gone. But it's like
your history. They're on you.
Yeah, whereas like with the Covington incident, I remember they temporarily suspended certain people for threatening kids.
Yeah, there was a lot of people. I saw a lot of people on social media showing a photo of the Covington kids and saying, I want to punch these kids in the face.
Right.
Or, you know, you saw a lot of that.
Right. Yeah, and that's sort of like a very ugly place that a lot of America is going, is that If a person believes somebody has said something wrong or thinks that they said something bad, they think they deserve violence. And that's so not what our culture is supposed to be about. It's just, no, punching, there is no string of arbitrary vowels and letters that justifies violence.
This is where we go again, you know, because it was threatening to punch conservatives.
Right.
You know, that's allowed to fly. Let's talk about the other hand. An actor called killed Jewish people. Took him 11 hours. Took Twitter 11 hours. I mean, you go ahead, tweet learn to code,
right,
and find out how fast they're on you. 11 hours?
11 hours, that's right. Well, I mean, so much of this stuff is purely situational.
And this is an Egyptian actor. I've never even heard of this guy.
Yeah, it's some completely obscure character I've never heard of.
Hesham Mansour?
Yeah, that was it. Though he has an 800,000 person following on Twitter, so I guess that's fairly impressive.
I guess in Egypt, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the whole idea is that he was ascribing all these strange powers to Jewish people. He's saying that they use their sorcerous powers to, quote, steal all the positive energy and manipulate the space-time continuum, and said that they cause terrorism, depression, and darkness
itself.
Well,
yeah. No. Not at all.
So then
All right, so basically he's insane.
Right.
He's
absolutely insane. And
he's crazy.
Right, and then he says, watch me torture Jews when the time comes, and watch the whole world watch in silence. And it's just like, yeah, certain people are permitted to tweet absolute violence towards other groups, whereas other people are not allowed to even just jokingly rib at people. It's very clear that so much of social media operates on a purely situational double standard, which is enforced with extreme prejudice.
What is the solution that the organizations and lawmakers are heading to from what you see? I mean, we've seen a lot of the social media hearings on social media, both in the Senate and the House. We've seen lawmakers weigh in on this. Facebook recently had a rule where their tribunal on who's going to judge content is pretty much all liberals.
Right. I think much of the problem has really, in the past, has been twofold. It's that, one, a lot of established people don't understand the tech. They don't understand the problem of how social media works. Two, the other problem is that other people are actually, are accused of being in the pocket of these social media companies, so that they're more or less paid off to betray. The most important value above all else in this country is freedom of expression. That's more important than anything else, in my opinion. So those are the problems of the past. But I think people like Josh Hawley, I think he represents the absolute future of where America and the party needs to go. And if I remember correctly, his idea is to operate through Section 230, which, of course, there's a distinction between whether something is a publisher or a platform, whether a tech platform is a publisher or a platform. And so,
well, and you have to, a publisher is legally responsible for the content.
Right.
A platform is not.
And a publisher gets to pick and choose what they publish, whereas a platform is obligated to be a platform, a sort of public online square for free speech. And so what he has done is he's trying to push some legislation that'll more or less make it so your Section 230 immunity, meaning that you have to act as a platform and you get immunity from any sort of illegal activity that happens on your website, that is conditional based upon your acting as a free platform. But his whole idea is that that will be conditional, and there more or less has to be an audit for you to receive those protections. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think he's absolutely on the money on that legislation, and I think that's really his sort of brand.
Where's that legislation at right now, do you know?
I don't remember. I mean, the news came out like a week or so ago.
So it's probably in committee.
Yeah, I believe so. But yeah, I think that more or less is the solution, because I really do think that, overarching, to bring it back to what Dylan was talking about, conservatives, free speech advocates, people who just value freedom, they need to realize, as Ben Franklin put it best, we'd best hang together, or we will surely be hung separately. I believe that was his quote. I might have that wrong. But it's just that, like, you know, the right to be left alone is great, and radical individualism is great. I get that. But in a time when so many people are dead set on completely eradicating the freedom of expression, of speech, the freedom to criticize, people really need to work together and say, okay, we need to actually pool our resources. We need to put our differences aside. We need to share. We need to fight for the shared common value. That's what America really needs to focus on going forward, or else America will not be the country that we so dearly love.
But it does get frustrating, especially when you watch Suspended on Twitter and all that to have a Facebook, and meanwhile they just put Louis Farrakhan back on, which you could easily make a hate speech argument against Louis Farrakhan.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, it's totally conditional upon who you are. Some people are allowed to express violent, openly violent hatred, and other people are not allowed to even critique certain groups. And that's really the trend that I've noticed. It's kind of like how...
Well, it's just like some people can talk about traditional marriage.
Right.
In that sense, and that can be perceived as hate speech by an LGBTQ advocate. They can say, oh my gosh, they're being discriminatory towards me.
It's just like how people talk about religious discrimination, and whenever somebody is talking about the threat of oppression of religious freedom, they almost are never talking about stuff happening to Christians. They almost are never talking about genocides of Christians going on in the Middle East. They're almost always talking about, you know, groups that are being concerned about in, you know, Western countries. That's really how it is. I mean, I just saw from some Twitter standards, and it's just like, there's not even a word for oppression of Christians. There isn't even a word for it. Whereas, like, Islamophobia, you can use that word, and then all of a sudden a person's branded as a bigot. But a person can say horrific things all day about Christians, and there's no word to address that
bigotry. Can we say Christianphobia? I think we should. Maybe we should make it a word today.
That would be good. I mean, yeah.
Christian phobia. There's a lot of it out there.
Christophobia, or you can make a reference to the fishes loves pescophobia or something like that. There has to be a good, eloquent word. That's the problem, though, is that we don't have any academics who are in the positions of power. I mean, because the way I see it, and I addressed this in a speech I gave to the California College of Republicans, is that the left right now, because they've been so focusing on teamwork for decades, they've systematically taken over almost all of the major institutions that control the future of where this country goes. So when you look at the media, you look at academia, you look at entertainment and so on.
Social media companies.
Exactly.
One of your your stories is the Facebook COO donated $1 million to Planned Parenthood advocacy. You know, I mean, this is what they're involved in.
Exactly. And it's so funny when people say to me, "Oh, but look, all the educated people, all the beautiful, respected people, they, you know, none of them agree with your religious views or your cultural views." And I'm like, "Yeah, these are the people who also think that, you know, socialism works. These are also the people who will completely ignore or communist genocides and believe things that are extremely nonsensical." And it's just like, that's what I've really noticed, is that conservatives really need to make sure that they actually protect some level of institutional power, because all the filters that control the future of where the country goes. I mean, what I'm worried about, I mean, I'm almost 30. What I'm worried about is that I'll have a family someday, and no matter how well I raise my kids, I'll send them to college, and then they'll come back with like a blue hair, having like communist values, hating their religion, their culture, their heritage, and things like that. That terrifies me, because it's like there are all these institutions which are specifically designed to radicalize people against their parents, against their culture, against their country, against their history. And conservatives have been willing to turn a blind eye to it. And that what I think is so important right now is that a lot of the party is realizing, okay, we actually need to take a stand. We actually need to protect our country's future.
Alexander Hall, thank you for joining us on the MRC TV podcast. Thanks for being a guest. We appreciate it today.
Thank you. It's been great.
If you want to catch up on any past episodes, you can check us out on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. Thanks for being with us.